Well, look who it is.
KFNC.
On Bellevue, Houston, a Gow Media Station.
ESPN.
97.5. Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, so you're playing back Sabbath because you know I can't go now, Tyler. Is that why you're doing that?
You told me to play it.
I did tell you to play it. But it hurts. But you know what? The two guys I sold the tickets to are friends of mine, and no better guys to go.
So you're selling tickets to your friends now. You're not giving the tickets to your friends.
Well, these I couldn't give because I had to leverage a few things to get these tickets. They were not cheap. Usually I give them away, but these were not cheap. Ozzy and Black Sabbath. That's if Ozzy makes it to next Thursday.
Yeah, really?
No, it's a great band. I actually like Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler better. All right, so welcome back to Soccer Matters here, ESPN 97.5. Ken Fogarty, Victor Ariza, Matt Peterson here in studio. Just, Ken, you had a good take during the break on the whole Villa sending off. Give it to us.
Well, there's people say there's politics involved in that. You don't want to send David Villa off. You want to keep him in the playoffs. You want to keep him playing as much as possible. You know, so people say, oh, there's politics involved, you know, from the league or wherever. But think about this. In the split second, the referee either awards a red card or doesn't. He's not thinking, well, it's David Villa, the playoffs, you know, promotion of the league and crap. He's just thinking it's either a red card, it's not a red card. And I think he got it wrong. And he wasn't assisted well by his support staff too, by the fourth official or his linesman. So I don't think in a split second he thinks, it's David Villa. I can't give him a red card. I just think he got the wrong call.
Okay, fair enough. And then, you know, it was interesting. After that, I'm watching the Europa League and Manchester United was frustrated. And, yeah, and Zlatan grabs a Fenerbahce player and, you know, puts a little death grip on him for a few seconds. He could have been sent off. He wasn't.
That's a red card, and I think that's a direct result of pure frustration on his part because he's having a stinky season. He's really struggling to put the ball in the back of the net.
And you as a guy from Manchester, we could talk a little bit about United tonight. But let's get through our playoffs here because we got another one to go with. New York City FC, Toronto FC, right? We didn't finish that one out. We only talked about the Villa incident in leg one. So Toronto scores too late. That was hugely dramatic. A stadium that they made bigger. I thought that was real drama at the end of that one. So, Victor, I'll start with you. A couple of thoughts on New York City FC, Toronto FC. That goes back to Yankee Stadium. Small stadium, a lot of penalty area play, but TFC's up 2-0 aggregate.
Right, and Toronto's won there before. You see what Toronto's doing. It's almost like they're on a tear. They won the wild card at home. The energy, they fed off their fans, and now the first leg. Some part of me still kind of thinks of Toronto in the past, and you're going to think they're going to screw this up somehow because they're Toronto, and in the playoffs, this is not. But this is a different team. This looks like a different team. I don't know, maybe I don't think so. I don't think it does any extra motivation, but maybe Jovinko's a little extra motivated because he got snubbed, or, you know, I think he's back from injury. Josie Altidore seemed to have gotten it together, and that midfield with Michael Bradley is doing great. And they have obviously a great goalkeeper with Clint Irwin, so they have the makings to go on this run and go all the way to the final, and you know, who knows, maybe close out the deal, but you can't count New York City out. The way they played out of the back under Vieira this whole season, I think he's shown that he's a top quality coach, at least in this league. His tactics are great. He's going to have his team ready, and I think we're in for a great series.
Coach of the year for me, Vieira.
Is Patrick Vieira?
For me, absolutely. Yeah. I think so.
We'll get to the awards too. Okay, so So Vieira, yeah, and I think he bucks the system of the foreign manager not being able to get things done here. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. Matt, momentum, a lot of times, as we have so learned so well here in Houston with the Dynamo, could be everything. Toronto FC seems to have it, right?
Yeah, and I'm kind of hypocritical here because I said 2-0 was very overturnable for the Red Bulls, but I think it feels different with NYC, mostly because Vieira's tweaks. Number one, with the Red Bulls, this is a core that's been together for several years that knows how to play, that's played the same system for a couple of years. Mm. With Vieira, it's very different, and you have some maybe unrest. I did like that he stood up and took accountability for his decisions, and he said he would have done it again if the game were to be played again. And I think that's what's great about Vieira and the pedigree he has. People make a big deal about him subbing off Villa in the 78th minute. He says, this is simply the decision I made, right? He says, who's David Villa? He wasn't playing well. I'm going to bring on someone else like Kyrie Shelton. It's a simple decision. Now, if an American manager with less pedigree of Vieira does that same decision, it's a much bigger deal. But Vieira just simply says, I made a change. So I like that in him a lot. You never know what's going to happen at Yankee Stadium. They beat FC Dallas, I think, 5-1 at home. They put up some big score lines at home.
Goals there.
Yeah, but the goalkeeper change seems a little bit off. We don't know the health of a lot of these players. And I think Toronto has lessons they learned last year in the playoffs. They've been good on the road this year. I would give them a better chance of seeing out the tie than I would Montreal.
And it's the small field, and it's you get into penalty areas really quickly there. And if David Villa's around it.
Sure, I think that size field suits New York more than Toronto.
I agree with you. What about Greg Vanney, the coaching job he's done? Toronto FC has never gotten to the playoffs before. They've gotten a playoff win now. Certainly he's it's nice being a manager and getting Michael Bradley, Javinko, and Jozy Altidore. It's nice pieces to work with, but I think some credit's due for Greg Vanney, right?
Yeah, he paid his dues in the academy. When Ryan Nelson was let go, he was promoted. So nice to see a youth development manager promoted. I also like these managers that take risks. Sometimes he plays three at the back. Sometimes he plays five, more conventional four. People say we overrate the formation. It's just fun to watch. He tries different things in different situations. I've heard that when they're up a goal in the second half, he'll bring on a third forward because the other teams are going for it. He wants to counterattack. He tries some different things. He actually reminded me of Wade Barrett a lot when I talked to him and how he approaches the game and how he sees the game.
Glenn, similar qualities between Vieira and Vanney. Strong managers, self-confident managers, and always do what they think's best. So just a great quality for both managers.
And Victor, you're picking TFC over NYFC?
I'm going to go with NYC, but I think that if Villa had gotten suspended, I think there's no way that they would have been able to pull this off.
Good point.
But I think having Villa, that gives them all the chance.
Let's see how much Frank Lampard has to do with this one as well. All right, on to the big one that we've already been talking about, FC Dallas and Seattle. 8-minute span, Seattle gets 3 goals. They've now awarded Brian Schmetzer the head coaching job in Seattle. FC Dallas won the Supporter Shield, won the Open Cup, loaned out Fabian Castillo. He wanted to leave. Got the devastating injury to Mauro Diaz. I personally was wanting them to do the treble and set history because they're, I believe, have the lowest payroll in the league, which I think is a wonderful message to be sent if they could have got it. I'm a big fan of Pareja. So let's start with you, Matt. Let's talk FC Dallas, Seattle.
I think they'll make it interesting. I think they'll maybe win by 2 goals. I think they'll come up just short, but it'll be an interesting game. I could see this game going 2-0, 3-1, 4-2. I think they're going to score goals. I think it's going to be a lot more close than some people are giving credit. But I know Dallas, they fought all year. They've been in 3 competitions. They've never backed down. They're not going to back down on Sunday at home. I think Seattle finds a way through, but it will not be easy.
Victor?
I find it hard for FC Dallas just because Mauro Diaz isn't going to be playing. And I think it's different. When they lost Fabian Castillo, it's different because he's, and I don't want to say just another goal scorer because obviously he was a very special player, but they have goals coming from other places, from Uriti, now from Carlos Ruiz. But what Mauro Diaz does in the midfield is irreplaceable. They don't have another player that can do that. And especially with Seattle countering that with Lodeiro, and the 3-0 win on aggregate, I just think that it might be too much for them to overcome. Obviously, with Pareja, you have a chance, and they're going to be well prepared. But I think that Seattle's—they just have to see this out.
Ken,
didn't Dallas change the formation, the structure, the way they played in Seattle? I think they kind of bunkered down a little bit, Glenn, and maybe were looking to counter. And I thought that was detrimental to the performance. I think if they go back to playing the way they can, regardless of losing Diaz, you can never discount them. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they're in a very, very deep hole. But I think they'll turn it over. I think they'll win.
Here's what concerns me about them. Because I think set pieces is the way without Morodios to get back in the game. I don't think they held the ball in the Seattle half very well without him. And the problem is it's Diaz who earned a lot of those free kicks and then took them. And without him there, you're going to have to put a lot on Barrios to get it done. But I think, you get an early set piece goal or something, momentum can change there a little bit. But I'm still going to see Seattle getting through this. I think there's too much experience out there. You got Ladero who's going to get a lot of the ball and keep the ball for you. And you know what? The Ladero to Jordan Morris on the counterattack is a huge threat. And by the way, they're doing this without Clint Dempsey.
Yeah. Point.
Pretty impressive. All right, we'll take a break here. Liberty Kitchen. You know I'm passionate about great food and my friends at Liberty Kitchen. They know how to serve up lunch, supper, and brunch better than most. You think of it as modern American comfort food, classics taken up several notches. The best burger, mac and cheese, chicken fried, mom's spaghetti chowder, farm stand crisp food that Liberty Kitchen stamps its claim on and owns. It's big flavor served at neighborhood socials. They've got locations in the Heights, River Oaks, Rice Village, Garden Oaks, and open now at the Treehouse in Memorial City. Gumbo, oysters on the half shell, cowboy surfer, smoked meats, grilled chops and steaks, signature cocktails, and cold beer. LibertyKitchen.com. Awesome place. We'll take a break. 7-Up break right now and a Bud Light break. It's like right now. It's like wow. It's like
giddy up. ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
NCAA College Cup, get your tickets. NCAA.com. We're hosting it here in Houston December 9th through 11th at BBVA Compass Stadium. Let's do this, Houston. All you former college soccer players, get on board with this. National TV, an amazing opportunity for us to put people in the building and make a statement after the last two College Cups have had nobody attend them. All right, so let's do this organically. Youth clubs, high school coaches, Houston Football Association, everybody involved with the game. Let's get people down there and make this a happening. Unam Pumas against Cruz Azul at BBVA Compass Stadium. That's coming up as well. You can get your tickets for that match. Taqueria Arandas, AXS.com. Chaco Jimenez comes to town. Paco Palencia. Let's do it. Kings Court, we're going to have a U.S.-Mexico watch party. Guys, you're all invited. I hope you're going to be there next Friday. I would love to see you down there. First fine beverage is on me. Kings Court for the U.S.-Mexico. We're going to have a group of nice people down there.
I'm heading right there now, Glenn.
Yeah. We might go tonight, and we'll get a good seat.
Exactly.
How about that? All right, so we got to get to Wilmer Cabrera. Giles Barnes is going to come up after us here. Ken Fogarty, Victor Ariza, Matt Peterson here in studio on the roundtable. Guys, doing a great job here tonight. I'm going to start with you, Ken. Wilmer Cabrera, what do you think about the hiring from the Houston Dynamo, and what does this mean in the big picture?
I think on the face of it, a great fit for me. You look at me, and I'll tell you why. I think not only does he have experience, he's playing the World Cup, 48 caps for his country, Colombia, and you hope he brings that South American mentality to the way the team plays. It depends a lot on the players he retains, the players they add to the squad. But I think the style of play has to reflect. His philosophy is possession with a purpose. And hopefully that purpose is to penetrate and attack and get behind teams. So I think that culturally, as well as professionally, I think it's a great fit, Glenn, and especially to the Hispanic community here in Houston. We have a massive Hispanic community. And I think
we're not tapping into it.
Exactly. And this is the conduit, I think, for that. If you can put a good to the other. And the way they play, Glenn, the way they play has to be attractive. And hopefully it'll be a good South American penetrating possession game, depending on the players he's got and his philosophy and his training. But hopefully I think it's a great opportunity to be successful in the community and in the league.
Victor?
I don't want to overhype it, but I do want to say I am excited about the signing. I think the very best era of the Houston Dynamo is yet to come. And Wilmer Cabrera will be a big part of that. Because the little that you have seen him, developing players, he didn't get the best run at Chivas USA, and obviously it was a club that was already set to fold. But what he did with some of those players, like the biggest one, Cubo Torres, and if he comes back, that's Cubo will be a star once again in Major League Soccer, I think, under Wilmer. You see the way he developed or he helped develop Mauro Manotas. earlier in the season, you know, having him down there at RGV and kind of getting him rolling. And you know, I got to talk to Mauro after one of the games, and you know, he shows he feels that comfort with Wilmer Cabrera and some of the other players. And I think they understand that this is an opportunity for themselves to evolve as players, to get better. And I think all around, he's explained, he wants to give the players a purpose. He wants to have them play a certain style and know what each of the roles is. And I think, you know, we saw the Dynamo at the end of the season, how far or how close they were to making the playoffs, even despite the bad season they were having. I think Wilmer can fix the problems and get them there.
Matt?
I think Wilmer's a great selection. I think, you know, I was rooting for both Wade and Wilmer for different reasons. I like them both. I think Wilmer brings different things to the table. I think watching RGV this year, I think a few things stand out. Number one, they were second in the league in goals, and they didn't really have a true defined goal scorer. Janin Katic chipped in 5 or 6. Ruben Luna chipped in 5 or 6. They got a lot of goals from midfield. They played the same home and away, but he also got big seasons from some young players. Memo Rodriguez was waived by the Dynamo in March, and he has a career year. He was outstanding. Charlie Ward comes over from Stoke City, might be a little quote-unquote entitled, used to the Premier League setup, goes to the Valley, plays every single minute of the season. There are stories like that up and down the roster, including Kevin Garcia, who is the oldest guy on the team, and he got signed by the Dynamo late in the year. So from the youngest to the oldest on the team, his message got through. And I also think this is a huge challenge for him, and I don't think he would have taken the job if he didn't have confidence he would have a big say on the roster, because I think he was, his words, blindsided at Chivas. He found out 3 months into the job that they were going to be folded.
That was a sinking ship.
Yeah, that was a sinking ship. He doesn't want that to happen twice. If you don't succeed twice as an MLS head coach, you're not going to get a third chance. So he knows this is his really last chance to succeed. He knows a lot needs to be changed with the roster. I think he's confident he and Matt Jordan can work on it together.
Well, this is going to be a big part of it. There's a couple of really interesting dynamics here. I mean, for the people out there who don't think for a second that he didn't want to become another Major League Soccer coach and he was dedicating the rest of his career to the Rio Grande Valley, you got to get out from under the rock you're under. That's number one. Number two, he is kind of an autocratic coach from all the conversations I've had. He's tough and very professional, and I think the pieces that he gets are going to be very, very important. I do think, as Ken said and as Victor said, he can be a conduit to moving the sport and forging the sport farther and penetrating into this community that is the great passionate Latino soccer community that we have here that we are not connecting with. I don't care what anybody says. I know what I see through my lens. I know what I hear. I know what I feel. So I think that's a big part of it, too. Can he revive Kubo Torres based on what is going to happen with Kubo Torres with Cruz Azul? That's another sort of feather in the cap. But I'm going to tell you guys, winning has got to be a part of it, and there's no doubt. But if we do really want to penetrate and forge some olive branches extending to pull in this Latino community, let me tell you, the soccer is going to have to be entertaining. And I think we've been fatigued the last couple of years. Outside of the 11 goals scored in the first, I mean, that was the biggest bait and switch in the history of soccer. We were all going nuts. 11 goals poured in at BBVA Compass Stadium. And then look at the total that was scored at the end of the year. But the fact is, this has to be entertaining. It's got to be fun. This team needs penetrators and guys that beat people off the dribble. We need a Ladero or a Mauro Diaz to make this game exciting here, because people don't want to go and watch just a hardcore collective team sitting back. I mean, maybe it's working in Colorado. Great. I don't think in this market it's going to work. Ken?
And I think there's a specific reason for that. Glenn, think about this. We play in the summer in the heat of Texas, and that's very difficult for teams that come and play here against us. 2,000 years ago when I played at Fort Lauderdale, we used to play northern teams that would come down, and at halftime, they were done. We'd knock the ball around, we'd make them chase, and they were done at halftime. So I think the style of play that this coach embraces is critical to winning games, playing entertaining soccer, but also to be successful. You know, I mean, not to be overly critical, but the own call in 2015, there's a long ball to Giles Barnes. He's marked by two defenders. And I thought it was completely the wrong way to play. He changed it two-thirds into the season, the 15th season, and they changed it at the start of this season. But way too late to change that. Hopefully this coach can come in and put the right roster together and implement the right style of play, the right playing philosophy that's creative, that's attractive, and is successful.
I didn't mind the way it was sold at the beginning of the year. The 4-2-3-1, two wingers that were going to penetrate, and a striker. But I just don't think the personnel was there for that.
I thought there was a lack of quality.
Yeah. I mean, look. DeMarcus Beasley himself said it, that every line on the team needs improvement. I think, without a doubt, this team needs a fulcrum to play through. I know people say, there's no such thing as a number 10. Well, the teams that are successful have got playmakers in this league.
Glenn, I think the coach is crucial, but the players are more important. The right players, the right blend. The players are more important than the coach.
Which leads us to this, Victor, and you got to answer this very quickly. And Matt, real quick, hit on this. Pressure's on Matt Jordan to get the right players now.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and I think...
Are you guys juggling this one?
No. I was going to have Matt get some airtime there, but I agree. And I think that's why, at the end of the day, when push came to shove, that's why they went with this signing. Because I thought maybe to please the fans, they would have gone with Wade Barrett. But I think they understand not just Matt Jordan, but Chris Kennedy. They need to prove to the fans now that they deserve to keep this job, and maybe to the new owner.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing in MLS right now is evaluating the domestic talent base. Riding the old horses too long is a problem for some teams. There's also good players available. There's good center backs available via trade. Look at Chad Marshall and others. Jovan Jones, a starter for Seattle, he was acquired via trade. So there's players that are discarded by other teams you can have within the pool. And then you also have to look at your own roster and figure out, are these players still good enough in 2017 in MLS?
My final say is this. It's going to take more than a coach and players to change the entire culture. This has to become a soccer club here, and it has to tie in the whole youth development element, because it's way behind. And I'm not pointing at anybody here, but I think that is a fact. And a fact is they've got to get better personnel in. That's another fact. So we'll talk more Dynamo throughout the offseason. I'm sure we're going to hear some differing things. Wilmer Cabrera will be on the show next week, so I'm going to ask him some very serious questions about the future and the culture of the show. For Ken Fogarty, Victor, Matt, thank you guys very much. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, Giles Barnes will weigh in on a number of topics. Tell me what's on your mind.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, a quick moment here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John Daspit and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com. It's 713-322-HURT. Now, we all need an attorney at some point. Whether you get in a car, boat, motorcycle, industrial accident, plant, refinery, you drive an 18-wheeler, it doesn't matter. The Daspit Law Firm will assure you that they will treat your case as if it's their own. It's DaspitLaw.com. They work for you 24/7, nights and weekend. 713-322-HURT. Quick word here for a great Irish pub. It is the Gorgeous Gale. You head over to 5555 Morningside. Catch all the best soccer matches over there. Liverpool supporters groups hang out over there. Stop by for a pint and a bite. They got great whiskey offerings as well. Say hello to my good friend Peter. It's the Gorgeous Gale, 5555 Morningside in the Heights, thegorgeousgale.com. Great to have this man on the show tonight. Giles Barnes joins us of the Vancouver Whitecaps, formerly of the Houston Dynamo. Giles, how are you?
I'm good, Glenn. How are you, man?
Good. I think it's long overdue. We've had you on here, and I thank you very much for coming on the show. I want to go through some of the MLS playoffs with you, having played against all these teams. But I first want to talk a little bit about Giles Barnes right now. And you know, when the trade happened here in Houston, I got to think that was a little bit difficult.
Yeah, it was for sure. Being traded to another MLS team was definitely something I didn't expect. I always knew that there was maybe a chance of me going abroad, like back to England. But to actually be traded to another MLS team wasn't something I figured. But, you have to look out for yourself, and football's a business. It's just unfortunate that it ended the way it did.
Now, in my case, when I played, most of the teams I was on folded because of where soccer was at the time, so I never actually got traded. But I know what being uprooted means, and of course, I didn't have a wife or family or anything. It was much differing times. But, you know, what's the first emotion? Is it? Are you angry? Are you confused? I mean, what first happens? Because so much has to happen to relocate to a new city, a new team. You got to get used to new players, a new coach. What's the first emotion?
You know, my first emotion was why, actually, to be honest. You know, I thought I'd been such a good ambassador for Houston over the last few years. It was my first place I'd come to away from England, which was actually my home. So to actually have to leave home again, you know, you have to ask your questions why. But, you know, as you get older and the years go by, at 28, you realize that football is a business, no matter how well you think you do or you're not doing for a franchise at the end. It's a business and definitely runs on.
Giles, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Just finish that thought again.
It was a tough one. You know, you always ask yourself why. But, you know, football's a business. So no matter how well you think you have or haven't done for a club, at the end of the day, it is a business. So you have to take it on the chin, especially getting a little bit older as 28. You realize these things happen and take it personal.
Yeah, when you talk to the Dynamo, how does that happen? They bring you in an office and then... You know, do you have an opportunity to talk with people, or is it just basically you grab your bags and you're gone?
I got a phone call pretty late at night, and that was it. So that was the kind of way it happened. I think it kind of happened that way. There might have been a game going on or something like that. So you know, it was unfortunate that I didn't get to say goodbye to a lot of my friends and teammates. But you know, as I said, it's business and it happens.
Did you see it coming? Did you get it? Did you have an inkling it was a possibility?
You know, to be honest with you, I knew that I might have been headed off to Europe, but to actually be traded in the league, especially after you know, being named captain that year, you know, just signing a new contract with the club and being, you know, told that you're part of the club's long-term plans, you don't really see it coming. But, you know, as I said, things happen in football, and you have to be big and ugly enough to move on.
He's Giles Barnes joining us here now, the Vancouver Whitecaps. So how have things gone in Vancouver? Obviously, you got your first two goals, and you helped put a dagger in the Portland Timbers' playoff hopes.
Yeah, you know, the season ended on a high note. Obviously, when I got to Vancouver, I really hadn't played that much, just coming back from being away on international duty and then being, you know, given that time of rest. And then, you know, I was like two games in, being back with Houston, then it actually happened. So it took a little bit of time to adjust my feet, to get my fitness back up to match fitness, and adjusting to playing on the turf as well. So that was a few big key things. But, you know, the club were fantastic in helping me settle in. The boys were incredible. The fans were incredible too. So it was, at the end of the year, it was like a little bit of a glimpse of what I'm capable of.
Vancouver's a beautiful city, Giles. It's a good soccer city as well. What's your contract like? How long do you want to stay there? And do you believe in the project that Carl Robinson has in reviving things next year?
Yeah, I do. You know, I don't know if a lot of people know. Me and Rob have actually known each other for a long, long time. We actually used to play against each other in England. So we've got a lot of mutual friends. We've always had talks. We always talk about playing against each other as well. You know, my contract, I've got a year left and another year after that, an option year after that. So I believe in the product that Vancouver's got going. And, you know, I'm here and in this league for as long as they want me to have me here.
Giles Barnes joining us tonight here on Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Always a great interview on this show. Giles, let's go through the playoffs. And obviously, we know the first leg results. So let's start, since you've had so much experience against these teams. Let's start with Colorado and L.A., the Galaxy 1-0 on aggregate so far in that one. Who do you think gets it done, and what do you think is the key in that game going back to Colorado? As a caveat, I would just say Colorado in a little differing position because maybe now they have to impose their game as opposed to maybe defending deep.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Colorado and the year that they've had. I think Pablo's done a great job with them turning that team around from what they were last year to get to where they are now. But I think they're just going to be edged by a little bit of experience. And I think LA as a team overall have a little bit more quality. You know, Colorado are fantastic. They dig it. They dig. They grind results. They've got a great team togetherness. But I think LA, once they score a goal and, you know, they get that fire in their belly, I think they're a hard team to stop. So for me, I think LA is going to take that one.
All right. You're picking the Galaxy over the Colorado Rapids. New York Red Bulls, Montreal. I had the pleasure of calling that game on ESPN. Montreal, as you so well know, older, experienced, a lot of experience on that team. I think only two guys under 30 years of age starting for them. How about New York and Montreal, with Montreal holding a 1-0 aggregate lead going back to Red Bull Arena?
Now, for me, that's a dangerous. You know, you got Lee Wright Phillips, you got Sasha Kljestan. To keep them quiet at home is going to be very tough. You know, I think Montreal, you know, I think they play decent on at home, but when it comes to actually going to Red Bull Arena and that crowd getting behind them, and obviously two MVP candidates really, really buzzing in front of their home crowd, I think it's going to be a tough one. Especially when you play against a team as dangerous as New York Red Bulls.
So you're picking the Red Bulls to get through.
I'm going with New York Red Bulls.
You got it. I'm going to agree with you on that too. And the Red Bulls will take on the Montreal Impact. Montreal, though, with a 1-0 lead, and Ignacio Piatti has had an outstanding season. All right, New York City FC, Toronto FC. Toronto has a 2-0 aggregate lead. How about that one?
This one's a tough one for me as well. I'm going to go on the side with the little magician on that team. I think, you know, he's an important factor, and, you know, I want to give Josie Altidore some credit as well. I think he's had a lot of stick coming back to the league, but I think since he's come back from his hamstring injuries, you know, been unplayable some games that I've watched. So I think to handle him, it will be tough, especially to break down the goal deficit they've got.
Okay, so Toronto FC for you, and Josie Altidore, Michael Bradley, Jovinko going to Yankee Stadium, which is interesting in itself because of the field being so small and so much play in the penalty areas. All right, let's move on to FC Dallas and Seattle. Unfortunately, FC Dallas conceded 3 goals in 8 minutes at CenturyLink Field, so it's a huge mountain to climb despite a team that's won the Open Cup and also the Supporter Shield, and the loss of Mauro Diaz seems huge here.
It does. You know, it is a tough one because, you know, I think Dallas aren't a team to be written off like that. And, you know, I didn't really see Seattle putting together the push, you know, mid-season that they pushed, but they've caught form, they've caught flames. You know, they've got that big push. But even at 3-0 down, I think Dallas is still dangerous, you know. As you said, they're going to be hurt without Diaz. But, you know, I think they've got something there. I think they've got a belief in their locker room, and they can come down from any deficit, especially going back home.
Giles, toughest guy that you have to play against when it comes to being marked in Major League Soccer as a defender, you know, when you're in the striker position?
I think Simon is that guy. He's a good defender. He can play on the ball. I think I'd probably have to say him.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he was unbelievable in that first leg in Montreal against the Red Bulls. He was everywhere. And I agree with you. I mean, even when he was closed down or he had to come out of the middle and provide some cover laterally and win a ball, you know, he would still find people in midfield or even bypass midfield and hit good balls to people that gave him a chance to hold it. So, yeah, totally impressed with that guy. What about Nicholas Ladero in Seattle and what he's meant to them without Clint Dempsey, by the way?
Yeah, you know, and I'd like to say to Boozer, I'm a text the other day. So, you know, I hope he gets better very soon. But as for Ladero, we played against Seattle maybe 3-4 weeks ago. You know, to say the least, he can play. He doesn't stop moving. He's a typical number 10, if that's what you want to call it. Pops up in great areas, always wants the ball, very energetic, can see a pass, and can obviously finish as well. So I think that was a great acquisition for the Sounders midseason to come and get him.
Yeah, good one. Giles, give me some thoughts on Wilmer Cabrera being named the coach of the Dynamo over Wade Barrett. What do you think of Wilmer Cabrera? And, you know, there's a lot of differing thoughts as to who should have been hired down here. There's people in the Wade Barrett camp, people in the Cabrera camp. What are your thoughts on Wilmer Cabrera getting the job here in Houston?
I think it's a good one. Wilmer's a really good guy, first and foremost. He loves the game. He's got a lot of ideas. He's got a lot of energy. And, you know, he knows what he's doing. And I think it's going to be a great hire for the Dynamo. And I think he feels that he owes himself. He's got a point to prove himself with obviously what happened with Chivas before. So I think he's got a lot of fire in his belly. He's had Cuba before. You know, if Cuba comes back, it's going to be massive. It's going to be massive for the Dynamo in general. But he's got a style of play that I think he's going to instill. So I think it's a good one for the Dynamo. You know, all the best to him as well.
Giles, you being on the outside now and being able to process things and being removed, you know, sometimes when you're in it, it's a little bit more difficult. Let me ask you a couple questions about the Dynamo. How about Kubo Torres? Do you think Kubo can revive it here in Houston? Do you think that line to the Latino community, that could light a fire? Is that still a possibility?
Yeah, I think the pressure has to be taken off of him. You know, I think you have to just let Kubo come back and let Kubo enjoy playing football again. It's such a way still. And sometimes the pressure, and when you don't perform and your confidence isn't there, it can get to you. So everyone needs to take the pressure off of Kubo, whether he's a DP, whether he's not a DP, whether he is, you know, the next great thing to come out of Mexico. Just let him play and enjoy his football. He's such a great person. He's got a great heart. He's a funny character. Just let him enjoy his football. And I think if people, you know, and the coaching staff allow him to just get on the field, block everything out, enjoy his football, give him a run of games, I think he can be a great success.
Was he kind of set up to fail, though, in this lone striker system? Because it just seemed it so difficult for people to get chances. I mean, I saw games where he played for 60 minutes and he subbed out, and he never even gets the ball near his feet near the penalty area the entire time. I mean, and that's his strength, right? His strength is not having the ball at the halfway line or near the sideline near the halfway line. So was the system in some ways something that really deterred his progress as well? And to that point, Will Bruhn, or even when you were up front?
Yeah, I can say about the lone striker position, at times it is a lonely, lonely position. You know, every striker would prefer to play with someone alongside him, or a midfielder that can really burst there, you know, burst to get up towards him. So, you know, I think... But Kubo is a 9. That's what you forget. He's not an 11. He's not a 7. He is a 9. So when you're as a striker, you have to play that position. You have to do it, regardless whether it's another striker or you're by yourself. But as I said, I think he just got to come in, enjoy his football, and have the pressure taken off of him, and I think he'll be just fine.
Last one, Giles, before we let you go. We thank you very much for your insight on the playoffs and everything Dynamo and Vancouver. From the outside looking in, I don't think there's any doubt the club has trended downward. It's become less relevant here in Houston. People are not renewing season tickets. What do you think has to happen in Houston?
Get back to winning ways. Get back to winning ways. Get back to playing exciting football. Get back to showing what it means to be a Dynamo player. You know, I remember when I first came here, what it was all about was wearing that badge, wearing the city on your back, and wearing it with pride. And I think, you know, no one goes out there to not play well. No one goes out there to not try. You know, I just think Houston just needs to get back to that mentality of winning games, winning football no matter how. Playing exciting football when you can, but first and foremost, playing for the city and how much it means to them. And I think you'll have the seats bumping again.
Giles, as always, we thank you very much. We look forward to having you on again after the first round of the playoffs. Maybe we'll bring you back on and we'll begin to play the prediction game again. I'm thinking you might go 4-for-4 here.
Yeah, I hope so. And then, you know, we'll get back on it and then we'll chop it up.
All right. Giles, thank you very much.
Nice one, Grant. Thank you, man.
All right. That's Giles Barnes, Vancouver Whitecaps. So many good years here in Houston. Quick word here for the Kings Court, 903 Hutchins. It's right by the south side of the stadium on the corner there. It's killer British pub food and Indian food. They got a cool rooftop there, cool view of downtown. Grab a meal. They're great DJs. It's a really, really different, cool vibe. So I'm saying we're going to have a watch party over there. I'm going to go down there for the U.S.-Mexico game. We hope to see you over there. It's a great place to go after games. Great beer selection. Say hello to Jay. It's the Kings Court, 903 Hutchins. NCAA Men's College Cup, December 9th and 11th. It's college soccer at its best here in Houston. You get your tickets at NCAA.com. I better say this right, NCAA.com. The reason why we're pushing this, I'm on the local organizing committee. We need to put people into these stands. So if you're the Houston Football Association, you should be pushing all these college players that make up your league to come support this. So help us spread the word organically. Youth coaches, high school coaches, what are you always talking about? You're talking about helping get your players to the college level. Well, guess what? Help us put people in the stadium, get your players down there. There's already some high schools that are bringing buses down. Youth coaches and clubs, we're counting on you. It's the NCAA Men's College Cup, NCAA.com for tickets. For producer Tyler Scott, for Michael Carroll, I'm Glenn Davis. Thank you for tuning in tonight. It's Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook, Soccer Matters. We'll see you next Wednesday.
ESPN 97.5.